This is Courtney Gray, Life and Body Coach. It is my pleasure to welcome you to another episode of the Road to Rediscovery podcast with Aubrey Johnson. Happy listening.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on the Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, I just want to send a quick reminder that you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts worldwide. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on Pandora. We're on just even smaller podcast host names that you've never even heard of across the globe. And we're always looking for feedback. If you get this show, please subscribe and download. And if you're unable to rate and review the show, I invite you to send me some feedback at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And I always appreciate feedback. As I've always said, feedback is a gift. And as always, we are truly, truly grateful for your listenership. All right. So now, my special guest spent 30 years as a board-certified chiropractor, nutritionist, and acupuncturist. She is now a certified master weight loss and life coach. She's also the host of the podcast, Thinner Peace in Menopause and Beyond. Let's welcome Dr. Deb Butler to the show. Dr. Butler, it's so great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be here. I've been looking forward to this for months.
Likewise, right? It's literally been months since we've last chatted, right?
I know. So I'm very excited to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, thank you so much. Likewise, we're excited to have you here.
Yeah.
So with your quite extensive professional background in nutrition and weight management, I'd like to go beyond asking your inspiration behind coaching your clients towards a healthier lifestyle. But I'd love to ask you, if you don't mind, if you can share any challenges that you've had early on with dieting.
Well, I did have a few challenges, and which led me to where I am right now. So yes, I'd love to talk about it. And as you stated, I was a chiropractor for 30 something years and telling people what to eat and what to do and working on their bodies. And I got to a point in my own career when I got into my 50s where I was wanting to make a change in my own career. And it was a very difficult transition because I didn't think I could do it. You know, and at the same time, I also found out that I was in menopause. And I also realized that the weight that I was carrying off and on for 30 years was back on, and it was really difficult to take it off. And the way that I learned how to lose weight was I used Weight Watchers. And I'm not saying anything negative against Weight Watchers. What I'm saying for myself is the way that I used it as a lifetime member is I went to Weight Watchers when I gained the same 20 or 30 pounds that I lost on Weight Watchers. And I did that type of scenario for probably 30 years. That's the way I managed my weight. And I thought it was smart.
Right.
I mean, I knew a thing or two, and I thought it was a good way to lose weight. The only problem for me was that, well, the problem that ended up is that when I got into my 50s and I was in menopause, the things that I did didn't work anymore, and everything was so much slower.
Right.
And at the same time, I was very discontented with my career. And I think a lot of women at this stage have the same thing where they're starting to wonder, You know, what do I want to do? I feel like I was in adolescence again. When I was in like in my early 20s, it was like, what do I want to do?
Yeah.
How do I want to get there? All of that. But I had no wisdom. I wasn't that old. I thought I was, but I wasn't.
Right.
But when
right.
we get into our 50s, mm-hmm. we have a lot of years of knowing what works for us, what doesn't work for us, what type of eating habits work for us, what doesn't. And what I learned with my discontentment about my career is I also liked to eat when I wasn't happy.
And
so the more that I was eating, the less I could help myself figure out what else I wanted to do. Because yeah. If I was eating it, I wasn't understanding or discovering what those emotions were about.
Right. You were immersed in eating.
I was immersed in eating and celebrating yeah. and all the things that I thought food was for mm-hmm. most of my adult career. Only I managed it with when I gained the weight, mm-hmm. I'd go to Weight Watchers to lose the weight. And when the weight was off, I was back to a party. And that's the way I thought it worked. I had no idea the first time that when I started getting into coaching, learning about coaching, because I was learning about what else I might want to do.
Right.
I had a weight loss coach ask a simple question. I never even heard of a weight loss coach or a life coach or any of that.
Yeah.
She asked a simple question of, why do you eat when you're not hungry? And do you know when you're hungry? And mm-hmm. do you know when you're full? Mm. Now, you read all the things that I'm good at and all the things that were in my career. And I never, ever thought about asking myself that question. Nor did I ever ask anybody else. I was told what to eat, how much they needed to eat in order to lose the weight that they wanted to, mm-hmm. and how much exercise they needed to do. And I always wondered why they didn't do what I told them to do.
I see. And I can understand why you would be wondering that. But I guess conversely, it was happening to you as well, right?
It's been happening to me. And yeah. I was telling people what I thought. I would like to send them to Weight Watchers. I thought they needed something external.
Yeah.
Just like I needed mm-hmm. in order to control this weight problem.
Gotcha.
Not realizing that the weight problem or the extra weight was a result of not understanding what was going on inside of me emotionally, never even thought about it, didn't mm-hmm. care about it, to be honest with you. All I cared yeah. about was how fast could I lose that 20 pounds and how fast could I start eating whatever I wanted again. That's all I cared about. And I mm-hmm. thought it was a great system. A smart woman like me thought that was a great system. And I changed so much. Yeah. From that time in my 50s, where not only did I change careers, but I also changed the way I managed food and right. how I used it.
Gotcha. That is, and that's critically important, right? Because
yeah.
now you're treating food as a commodity and it's something that you're managing. And you have a more cerebral approach to it than mm-hmm. the emotional approach, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And that can help you really take an objective look at food and say, okay, this does look delicious, but I'm not hungry, so I'm not going to eat, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it sounds pretty simple, but...
Easier said than done.
All I cared about was, can I lose weight? And I don't care. I had the best willpower.
Yeah.
When I was in weight loss mode, I could have willpower. I wouldn't eat. I could use the willpower until the weight was off. And then it was a party again. And I think a lot of people do that in one way or another.
Yeah.
And I think women are subject to this even more so than men. And I know it's still a problem, but more so for women in terms of what it means to be thin.
Yeah.
You know, most women come to me and I say, why do you want to lose weight? And you know what they say most of the time? They say, because I want to be healthy. But okay. The truth is they don't want to be healthy. They want to be thin. And that's exactly what I wanted.
Oh, I said I wanted to be healthy. Yeah.
But really what I meant is I wanted to be thin. And I equated healthy and thin. Right. And they're not the same thing.
Yeah. Thin doesn't translate to healthy or vice versa.
And no, it doesn't. Yeah. And, you know, you can weigh more than what a BMI is or anything like that, and you could be healthy. It really doesn't determine it, but people feel more comfortable saying they want to be healthy than they say, I want to lose weight. But what motivates them is the weight loss, not the health. And that's why they come to me, because if the health was a motivator, they wouldn't be talking to me. They would lose their weight.
It was very important. Right. For sure. You know? And so, I don't know, to me, it's like the chicken and the egg type of thing, because we're talking about, if they took their health seriously, and took their health to heart, like you said, they wouldn't be talking to you, but the health inspires them. If eating healthy gets them thin, then I guess they could be inspired to eat healthy. The behavior is where I get tripped up on, because there's being thin and there's being healthy. What if they're healthy and they don't look what they want it to, how they want it to look like, as thin as they anticipated before taking this journey? Would they still be discontent in some cases?
I think it's a great question to ask. Mm-hmm. Like, what would you do if you were thin? Would you want to eat whatever it is you think you can't eat?
Yeah.
And a lot of people really have the fantasy of eating junk food if they could be thin, that it would be okay. That it would be okay as long as they didn't gain weight. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I remember having that fantasy. It's like, well, I would eat potato chips all the time if I didn't gain weight.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is, really, when we get down to it, it's really not what we would do. It really wouldn't be. We tell ourselves that because we think there's something wrong with us and that we have to use food in a way that is almost punishing. Like, we have to be punished.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to eating in a healthy way, eating when you're hungry, stopping when you're full, because it's the best way for you. There's nothing wrong with you. It's just really what you would want if we weren't in a culture that was so strange about eating and thinness and food and all of that. And all I want to do at this point, what I learned is that you really want to have a healthy relationship with food.
Absolutely.
And you want to have a healthy relationship with yourself.
Absolutely. 100%. And this is fascinating, Dr. Deb, because what I'd love for us to talk about is I'd love for us to start going into painting the picture, setting the foundation for, quote, diets. And I have a couple questions regarding trends, fads, and so forth. And then I want to talk about the specifics for women with menopause and some biological questions I have for you there. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you know, having a healthy relationship with food and a healthy relationship with yourself, we're not talking about deprivation, and we're not talking about setting unrealistic, lofty goals to reach a healthy relationship with food or to reach a healthy relationship with yourself, right? Yeah, we're still talking about eating because we need to eat to live.
That's right.
Right. But we're talking about doing what's reasonable when it comes to eating when you're hungry and what to eat when you're hungry. And certain foods work for certain people and certain foods don't. Is that right?
I believe that everybody knows what they need to eat. Okay. I mean, the people that I work with, just like for myself, I knew what to eat. It's like, you didn't have to tell me. And I,
right.
But it didn't mean that that's what I did.
Sure.
And why I didn't and why others don't is the work that I do is what shows up every time. Like one of the things that I do is I like to use food journaling, not like most people are accustomed to. Like I don't really care what you're eating.
Right.
In a journal.
Okay.
I use food journaling as a mind journal, but we use it by putting food in your mouth. Mm-hmm. And hunger and fullness is when are you putting food in your mouth when there is no sign of hunger? And you know it. And you know it. So I teach people how to do that first.
Okay.
You know, called the physical hunger scale, which I use that goes from a negative 10 to a plus 10. And I teach people how to eat between the twos. Eat at a negative 2, which is a whisper of hunger, and a plus 2, which is a whisper of fullness, which I'm just teaching how I think our body is wired and adding numbers to it. Because for the people that I work with and for myself, I did not know at all. I didn't care.
Yeah.
All I cared about as a Weight Watcher is how many points could I get and how much could I get at any one given time. It was how much could I eat and lose weight. That's all. I mean, I was so afraid of being hungry.
Yeah.
And at the same time, it was just this problem that I had that I didn't even understand that I had because I could lose weight. But all I wanted to do was to lose weight so I could go back and use food again to reward myself for losing weight. And I see. A lot of people, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
That a lot of people that I work with, as soon as they start losing weight, they start wanting to overeat again.
Yeah.
As soon as the scale starts going down.
Wow.
And so I do a lot of work with the scale.
Yeah.
Because we would think the scale would help us, give us some information. And that's exactly what it does. It gives us, gives us information. Mm-hmm. But a lot of women use it for all kinds of reasons to feel bad about themselves. So if they get on there and they don't lose any weight.
Right.
They get upset and they get mad. And when they get mad and angry, what do? They end up using food and overeating it again to make themselves feel better because the scale didn't give them what they wanted. So the scale becomes a problem. And so many people want to get rid of the scale.
Right.
But getting rid of the scale doesn't get rid of your mind.
No, it doesn't.
How you attend to the scale with your mind. What you think about the number is more important than anything else. And if you're not willing to look at how you think about it, it's going to be really difficult. Like the scale is just going to show you if you're doing, if what your behavior is showing you. That's all it does.
Right. And how do you manage that information within your mind once you receive it from the scale?
Yes.
From the picture you're painting here, Dr. Deb, it sounds as if people are using the scale as an excuse to eat if they did lose weight and they want to celebrate, as well as if they didn't lose the weight they expected. And so they're on an emotional tirade to eat. So either way, whether it gives them the weight number they want or don't want, it can resort to eating depending on how you manage receiving that information.
Depending on how you think about it.
Okay.
Manage it. Exactly. And I really work with women on having some neutrality with the scale and for them to see what they are doing with it. You know, it can be a friend. It's probably the most useful tool that there is for knowing if you lost weight or not.
Right. Yes.
But if your thoughts cause you to overeat because it says one thing or another, then do you throw the scale away or do you learn how to manage your mind and see what's going on up there?
Right.
Oh, I say you learn to manage your mind and use the scale.
Yeah, 100%. Me too. Because, I mean, there's a myriad of byproducts down the line. Psychologically, you know, when you try to figure out, okay, why am I responding like this when I see that number? Yes. Okay. How can I, what tools do I have or methods I have to change my way of thinking?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what am I thinking?
And what am I thinking? Right. And when they apply, what am I thinking as the most important? Okay. And then based on what they apply to change that way of thinking, there are other, like a domino effect, other areas of their behavior that can improve as well in terms of how they relate to food and so forth.
Correct. For sure.
Man, that is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. Now, Dr. Deb, if we can just kind of set the foundation, and I have a couple questions, and I'm going to be selfish when I ask these questions.
Oh, okay, because, good.
Because it's something I've always wanted to know. I want to go back to just the root word diet. Just the word diet, okay? I have a feeling, and I don't, and I'm probably not right, but this is why I'm asking.
Okay.
I have a feeling that, you know, the term diet, I feel, is more universal than how most of society interprets it. In other words, when you hear the word diet, most people are there. They refer to a plan for losing weight or a plan to be healthy. And so I've always thought that a diet is really a pattern of what or how we eat, whether it's healthy or unhealthy. But I just wanted to know your thoughts on that from a foundational standpoint.
Well, I think you're absolutely right what you just said about a diet. But I think what happens in this culture that we live in, when I say like a diet mentality, what I mean by that is that we are using something external other than what's going on in ourselves to tell us how to eat and when to eat and what to do.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, for me, it was Weight Watchers. It was very external. And I believed that's the only way that I could do it. And as I keep saying, as smart as I was, but I was, I think I'm smart. And I think a lot of people that I work with are, and yet, I had no clue internally because I wasn't concerned about it. I was concerned about that external diet thing that I needed to do. And I only wanted to follow it to lose weight. It's not the way I wanted to live.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Yes.
To me, living was losing my weight and then having a party with food until I had to lose weight again. And it was an ongoing cycle.
Yeah.
I probably lost 250 pounds in those 30 years over and over and over.
Oh, my.
And that's because I didn't think that it was the end all.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a way to get the weight off.
More of a means.
That's it. And what I teach people now is whatever it is you do, that's just what you do.
Yeah.
You find a way to do it and handle food in the way that you want to live. It doesn't change that much as you lose the weight. The way you do it is the way you do it.
So if you don't mind me asking, is this the distinction in your program from conventional diet programs and plans?
Well, I don't know that I would, a diet program. I just think that I don't tell people what to eat.
Okay.
If you want to call it a diet, like for instance, I have clients that they'll go out to eat with friends and whatever they order, there's food left on their plate because they're full.
Yeah.
And somebody will say to them, oh, I noticed that you've lost weight and you're not eating all your food. What are you doing? What diet are you on?
Yeah.
And they will say, oh, I'm just not hungry.
I see.
And the response will be something like, well, what diet is that? Because that's the way that we look at things, is that there must be a diet about eating when you're hungry. I mean, it's like we eat when we're hungry and stop when we're full because that's the way we were made. It's not a diet.
No, it's not a diet.
An external diet. But in the way that you were talking about it, I guess you could say it is. It's a way of eating.
Yeah, a pattern, a way of eating. But and this is what's so counterintuitive to me, right?
Yeah.
It's when you're full, you stop eating. A lot of people don't. Why? Because of the taste or the emotion. So that leads me to ask another question, if you don't mind, Dr. Deb.
Yeah, please.
I would love to know, okay, if you could break down 100% into three different areas in terms of how you coach and how you guide your clients.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Food and way of eating and eating lifestyles, in my view, and I'm sure I'm missing this, but just in my view, can be addressed in one of three ways. To me, it could be addressed here,
mm-hmm.
here,
mm-hmm.
or here in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can break down into percentages in what you coach and guide, what percentage combination is what you coach and is the most effective in managing weight and weight loss?
Well, you know, I would just say that it's equal. That it's equal. If you just, I would say it's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
It's not a lot of anything. It's a little bit of everything. And mm-hmm. the way I like to talk about it, you included the heart, and I'm not wanting to not take it out, but
right,
I
right.
think of it more just like a mind-body connection.
Gotcha.
And
okay.
The body basically is one thing and the mind is another thing. So mm-hmm. for instance, the body is where the physical hunger lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I teach people how to eat when they're hungry and stop when they're full by using numbers. So fullness from a 0 to a plus 10 can be a plus 10 that you're stuffed.
Right.
And we're talking about a plus 2, which is light. But when we talk about full, it could be anywhere between 0 to a plus 10. So first we have to define fullness, because a lot of people will say they're full, but what do they mean?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
So we have to understand, get the same lingo going on about what fullness is and a number, because mm-hmm. it's not like, you don't have to teach children numbers for when they're hungry or full. They'll just tell you and they'll throw food in your face if you try to give them something and they're full. They won't eat it.
Yes.
But you get an adult and there's a good chance they'll eat it anyway.
Oh, and, sure.
And that is because I think of this diet mentality that we have trained ourselves in, like I trained myself, mm-hmm. is that if we use something externally to decide when to eat and when not to eat, like a diet,
right,
then we don't have that connection with our body that's always telling us when to eat and when to stop.
That's
we lose
true.
It because we teach our mind and body to do something that's actually not natural. What's natural is eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full, and your body already knows that.
Yes.
So all I'm doing is trying to reteach something. This mind-body connection's already wired.
Right.
I'm making up numbers. I'm calling them twos.
Yeah, yeah.
As for that. But to really get in touch, to be able to know this is a plus two, this is a plus three, to be that in touch with your physical body.
Yes.
Is life-changing. If you've never thought about it before, and I never thought about it and didn't care. And I think there's a lot of people that when they come to me only because I want to do that thing about eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full.
Yeah.
I want to learn about that.
Yeah.
It's sad to me that that's such a novelty.
Right. It seems so obvious, but you know what, as you were explaining to me, Dr. Deb,
yeah,
I have to admit, what you said just really turned the light bulb on for me in a very profound way. And
wow.
and as I am looking at this light bulb, I'm also thinking, why haven't I thought of this earlier? Why haven't I considered this earlier? Yeah. What you said, at least that resonated with me, was when we rely on a third party program or entity outside of ourselves to dictate where and when and what to eat, then we lose that connection with our body that naturally tells us it's already wired. So why not leverage that? And that is your true compass rather than something that doesn't even exist within you telling you where and when and what to eat.
Exactly.
That was mind-blowing. It's a breakthrough. And at the same time, why haven't we just thought of this before, right?
It seems like it should be pretty simple.
Yeah.
And I think it's too simple, you know?
Yes.
And at the same time, I'm not saying that I don't think that you should be educated.
Right.
You know,
right.
I think we learn new things about food and our bodies all the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying don't pay attention to that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that you use your mind. Like, I think that, you know, educating yourself and knowing the foods that are healthy and then eating them and they feel good in your body and using them in a way, nothing wrong with that until you start somebody telling you, well, you can't eat this, but you can eat that. And this causes that. You got to take it, but see what works for you because everybody is different. What works for one person may not work for another person.
Yeah.
And if you're connected to your body enough, you'll know what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And I think that's like the whole journey that I went on. Mm-hmm. And even to this day, like I think you should, I want people to believe, I want them to think that they can eat whatever they want.
Yeah.
I that's the way I think now. And I never used to think that. I didn't think I could unless I was not on a diet and then I could eat anything I want.
Right.
But just because you believe and think that you can eat anything you want doesn't mean that you're going to eat all unhealthy food all the time because you can eat anything you want. You really wouldn't do that. You really wouldn't. But the fantasy is that you would. I could just eat potato chips all day long and whatever.
Right.
Oh, that would be so great.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
When you really get connected, what would be so great about eating potato chips all the time? Because you're not going to feel good. And most people understand that.
Yeah.
Once it's not a deprivation restriction thing anymore, that you can't have them. Oh, I'm overweight. I can't eat that. Because as soon as you tell yourself you can't eat it, your brain's going to override it with eat it anyway. Poor thing.
Yeah, it is. And there's a little bit of counterintuitiveness in that regard as well, at least in my mind. But I equate it to someone said this years ago.
What's that?
And you know, everyone has a stance on this. I'm not saying this to have a stance. I'm just using it as an example.
Yeah.
Marijuana.
Yeah.
Cannabis, right?
Yeah.
They, you know, people said for years, you know, there's all these arrests, there's possession, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, to really cut down on the crime with marijuana, make it legal. You know, now people are of different mindsets when it comes to that. But some people say make it legal, tax it, you know, this, that, and the other. And then you'll see the usage go down or the arrests or the criminal activity go down because it's used in a commerce type setting. With dispensaries and so forth. Now, again, that is, you know, I'm a totally neutral mindset when it comes to that. I'm not promoting one or the other, but I'm trying to use it as an example.
Yes, the mindset.
That is counterintuitive for the mindset, right? And it sounds like that's what you're mentioning here. When people are in tune, they can eat whatever they want, but when they are in tune, you know, that's that barometer, I guess you can say, where they are like, well, yeah, I can't eat a bag of chips every day, but you know what? Because I'm in tune and connected and listening to my body, I don't do it.
Yes.
Simply put.
Yes. And I categorize foods into two groups, joy foods and fuel foods.
Mm-hmm.
And fuel foods are basically nutritious food for your body as my client sees fit. Like I don't tell somebody what those nutritious foods are.
Okay.
People tell me what those nutritious foods are. They call them fuel if they think it's nutritious. And they want to ask me, do you think it's nutritious? Because most people don't even trust themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
To make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things, I don't tell them. And a lot of people have a hard time with it. They'll go, well, I think it might be. When you're messing around in your own head,
yeah,
is it or isn't it? Like you can't even be straight with yourself.
Right, right.
So the first thing is get clear what is and what isn't.
Yes. Have that clear.
And then you know that one way of eating is fuel eating.
Right.
Now, a joy food is basically, it's just what I call a non-nutritious food that tastes good.
Yes.
It's not going to do anything for your body. It just tastes good.
Gotcha.
And I think that you can include those joy foods in the way that you eat. But the way I define it is it's a joy food is something that is non-nutritious. Mm-hmm. You eat it mindfully, bite by bite.
Yep.
And you stop the minute you're through enjoying it.
Yes.
It's not a matter of filling up your belly.
No.
It's an enjoyment factor. And you stop the minute you're done. And I practice this with people a lot because nobody knows how to do it because most people eat those foods when they shouldn't be eating them. So they're never enjoying them. And they're overeating them because they're never going to eat them again.
I'm
done tomorrow. So I'm going to have this bag of potato chips because tomorrow I'm not going to eat potato chips anymore.
Which is never the case. No, that's never the case. The next day will come, they'll eat chips.
That's right. So thinking, well, of course I can eat chips. And learning how to eat them in a way, to me, the way they're meant to be eaten is not a lot.
Right.
And totally enjoyed.
Yeah. You don't eat a whole bag in one sitting, right?
Well, you don't. I mean, if you can enjoy every chip, you can.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Most people probably won't.
Right.
But in the beginning, it is a very difficult practice because most people don't believe they can eat it.
I see.
Because they have to lose weight. I think you can lose weight and eat them.
I think so too. I mean, in a way that is in line with your body. Again, listening
it's
to
it's not
it.
A thing of the body. It's really it's an enjoyment factor. And if you're mindful about enjoying something, it's very different than when you're not paying attention. So a lot of the things that I teach are mindfulness around food and around your own thinking. Do you know what you're thinking?
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It does make sense. But at the same time, being mindful, they're also going to be mindful to identify or determine when they're full from the joy food, right?
No.
They're not. Okay.
It's really, and I know this is a little confusing, but it's important because I don't even think you need to fill up with them.
I see.
Uh-huh. I think it's an enjoyment factor. So it really is much more of a mind-body connection in terms of enjoyment, which is a lot different than trying to fill up with it. I would never eat enough cake to fill myself up. It would be more than I would want.
Right, right.
But I would want a few bites. It would taste really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't want to, like, I don't want to use them or I don't want to teach that you need to use them. You have to be careful when you're hungry.
Yeah.
I like to think that when you're hungry, you use fuel.
Yes. Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And I also teach a little more advanced is mm-hmm. how to combine a fuel joy meal.
Now
which
that's
is
cool.
A little bit of mind and a mind body connection. It's like enjoying the foods that have no nutritious value and filling up on the foods that have the value. It's work, but you can do it.
It is possible. Enjoyment and fuel together.
Yep.
Wow. That is so
advanced.
That is so That is it. That sounds advanced. I mean, the second you said it, it sounded advanced to me.
Yes.
Because I'm trying to think in my head, okay, what does that look like? I'm like, you know what, Aubrey, just step away. Okay, it's advanced. Just take it as that. And I truly believe it is. Dr. Deb, this is fantastic. You know, as you were talking there, I was thinking that maybe one of the reasons why so many people kind of miss that that obvious that you mentioned earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Just being in tune with themselves, and you know, for fuel, eating when they're full, stopping when they're you know, when they're not hungry, and that sort of thing. Is, I think today's world and society has such a grip on the mainstream with different diets. I mean, you hear paleo, gluten-free, Atkins, there's low fat, then there's low carb, right? Keto.
Yes.
And when you have all these things, I mean, that can be a strong influence for anyone to gravitate towards one of those to see if it works for them or if it doesn't.
Yeah.
But I think what I'm hearing is what you're saying is educate yourself on what foods are good for you and not necessarily the diets. Is that
correct?
Okay. Okay. Awesome. So that leads me to ask.
Yeah.
What's the influential element in today's world that is driving the trends in each of these types of diets? I mean, you know, like it was low fat in the 80s, low carb in the early 2000s, Atkins came on, and then all of a sudden keto, then South Beach, and you know, and all these different things. And so we're so easily swayed. What is the elements, or maybe one or two elements, that's causing us to be so easily taken and swayed by these types of plans and programs when it's really right in front of us, as you say?
Well, I think we're programmed to believe that there's something about thin that makes you a better person.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. And especially for women.
Yeah.
That's why I think when people say they want to be healthy, I think they really mean they just want to be thin. And it's almost like the acceptance into this culture. And I think that's what leads to all this fighting with food, is this idea of being thin, and that the reason you're not thin is because you can't control yourself around food and there's something wrong with you.
Got it.
When really it's just, you've been fed a lot of information that's wrong. There's nothing wrong with you.
I see. Now that makes sense. And thank you for clarifying that for me, Dr. Deb. Now I'd like for us to pivot. I had a couple questions regarding the work you're doing, and you've alluded to some of these, which is great, which is awesome. The work you're doing with women and when it comes to their eating habits while on menopause. Okay. Again, outside looking in, when I think of menopause, I think of hot flashes, body temperature sways.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And I never thought of eating. Okay. As impacted, or eating behavior being impacted. And so I want to know, and this is again a selfish question for me. Okay. I want to know, biologically or neurologically, is there some sort of connection between the eating habits, say during a young lady who's pregnant and during her pregnancy, and then someone 30, 40 years older who is going through menopause? Is it some reactors in the brain or something neurological that controls both, or are they mutually exclusive? And I know I don't want to get into the granularity of, you know, the medical spaces or anything, but I just want to know, kind of like, is there a connection at any degree that in your mind?
I think the easiest way to put it, the most simple way to put it, is that one of the things that seems to be known about menopause is women are more apt to gain weight during menopause.
Right.
Right along with hot flashes, right along with irritability, mm-hmm. not sleeping. I just think that's one of the symptoms. And I think that that's there because one of the things that happens over time is metabolism goes down.
Sure does.
So what a 20-year-old can eat and what a 50-year-old can eat are very, very different. And there are many 50-year-olds that are eating the way they used to eat, not realizing that when metabolism goes down, appetite goes down. So if you've always been connected to your appetite and not paying attention, like for me, points and diets and what I should be eating, then I might be noticing that I'm not as hungry. And I think it's a rude awakening in menopause that I can't do what I used to do. It's just like what women say all the time about a lot of things. I can't eat the way I used to. I can't do this. But I think it's an awakening because you have not, your metabolism been going down and you haven't noticed it because you have no idea about your own appetite because you haven't been paying attention.
Right.
So I like to put the attention on your appetite, the hunger scale, for you to realize that, because a lot of people will come to me and say, I'm hungrier than ever.
Yeah.
But what they really mean when they say that is they're not physically hungrier than ever. They're emotionally hungrier than ever because emotions get blown out of the water. In menopause due to hormonal imbalance, due to a lot of things. And if you've been used to eating emotions your whole life. And struggling with weight and diets, you are in for a rude awakening come menopause.
Oh my goodness. So true. I see now.
If you haven't been connected, this is the time to get connected. It's not going to get any easier. It's only going to get harder.
Yeah. And now that you've articulated it that way, that is crystal clear in my head. Again, an outsider looking in, but the way you articulate it, the time to get connected is now.
That's why I like this age, because it's like the same thing for me. My discontentment about other things was there. Which was increasing my emotional hunger. Once I started taking care of my emotional hunger and following my emotions, my discontentment, my desire to do something different, and to eat when I'm hungry and stop when I'm full, I ended up in a different career. I moved. Because I stopped feeding my eating. I stopped feeding my emotions with food. I started feeling my emotions with food, and my emotions were there to say, hey, sweetheart, it's a really good time to do something else.
Gotcha. So that bridges or draws the bridge between the 30 plus years in chiropractor, nutritionist, over to now as a coach. Oh, Dr. Dev, that is wonderful. Thank you for like illustrating that for sure, because that was one of my questions as well. And we got so immersed in some great, great insights with nutrition and food and mindset that you know, I kind of forgot that question, but you came right to it. And I love that transition, right? Because we have chapters in our lives, we have seasons in our lives, and you know, we find ways to redefine who we are once we reach a certain point in our life, especially if something plateaus. And I think that, you know, that's good. That's okay. As long as we are still within the core of our character and integrity of who we are, you know, we're still the same person. We're just redefining ourselves and what purpose we have now in life, right?
I think we become more of who we are.
Yes. Yes.
I think this is the time. I don't think you have the wherewithal at 20.
Agreed. Totally agreed. A lot of people think they do.
We all make big decisions.
We all do.
About what we want to do for the rest of our lives based on no experience.
Sure do. Absolutely.
We hit this age, menopause. I call it like a second adolescence. It's like, it's a hormonal imbalance in a different way.
Yeah.
But it's still the same questions start popping up. Who am I and what do I want to be doing?
And what do I want to be doing?
You have the wisdom if you use it and don't feed these emotions with food, they will lead you.
Yes. Yes. You heard it right here, everyone. You heard it right here.
You heard it.
Don't feed your emotions with food.
Feel your emotions. Don't feed your emotions.
Thank you. Feel. There you go. Feel your emotions. Don't feed your emotions.
And it will lead you to where you want to be.
It'll lead you to where you want to be.
Who knew?
Word to the wise.
Who knew that what you put in your mouth could be so profound?
Oh, for sure. So true. So true.
It's profound.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has lasting impact. I mean,
lasting.
Yeah. Oh, Dr. Deb Butler. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming onto the show. Well, thank you equally. I loved it as well. So much great insight. I've learned some stuff. Good. There's things that resonated with the listeners. And speaking of listeners, how can they connect with you, follow you, and subscribe to your podcast, download and listen to a couple episodes, and just learn more about your great work?
Well, the easiest way is to listen to my podcast, which is called Thinner Peace and Menopause and Beyond.
Yes.
And I have 420 episodes.
Wonderful.
So, and I would suggest that if you want to start listening, listen to the beginning because it's the basis for the tools. And then you can kind of skip around. That's one way to learn more about what I'm talking about today. If you're more interested in talking to me or working with me, then what I offer are little mini sessions where we can talk together and find out if the process that I use would be good for you. Because I like to talk to people because not everybody is going to be a good fit for this. And I know by talking to them, or they'll know by talking to me.
Yes.
But it's not something that I offer on my website. People can't just sign up.
Gotcha.
Because I want it to be good for both of us. And that's the way I know, is by talking. So it's a mini session. And if you want a mini session, you can go to drdebbutler.com/work with me. And that's where you can set that up.
100%. drdebbutler.com/work with me.
Yes, that's right.
All right. Well, we're going to put that link, as well as other links, including the link to your podcast, in the episode show notes, so the listeners can click, connect, learn more about you, download some of your episodes while listening to this wonderful conversation.
Wonderful.
Dr. Deb, again, it's been a pleasure. Such a delight. I hope we can stay in touch and hopefully bring you on the show sometime in the future.
Thank you, Aubrey. I've loved it. Thank you. Oh,
absolutely. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in. I really do. And look, you may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, we're never alone. And hope is always around the corner. I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, someone you love, who needs inspiration, motivation, and support. We're all roadies on this journey of life. That's right. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. And we'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.